This is an AMI podcast.
Hey guys, welcome along to another episode of Double Tap. It's Monday, it's the 22nd of April, 2024, and we're back. Although, to be honest, if you'd had the last 15 seconds before we started, you might think we shouldn't.
You're listening to Double Tap, your daily accessible technology show. Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey, Sean Preece, how are you feeling? Are you feeling better? Because I told everyone you'd be feeling better.
I am feeling okay, thank you. Yes, I'm still a little bit husky, I believe the word is, but no, I'm doing well, Stephen. How are you?
Well, fine figure of a man as I am.
You're sounding good.
Yeah, I have to say, I love microphone processing because it makes a cold sound nice.
Need it in real life, that's the thing.
Yeah, no, that's the problem when I'm out. I think that's what it is. I think you've stumbled upon something, because when I'm out and about and I'm having a conversation with someone, I just don't feel my voice packs any punch. And it's because I don't have a microphone and a headphones, to maximum on my head.
When you speak to us in real life, we sound like chipmunks. That's what it is. It's all about the processing. No, you know what? I just slept. I've slept for like 3 days straight. I am feeling better, though. Just a little bit of a sore throat.
Well, I want to say thank you to a couple of people. First off, to the legendary one and only Mr. F. Giving us Friday off. Mr. F. F stands for Friday off.
God bless you, Mr. F. F for feelings. He has them. Thank you.
Occasionally, yeah. Once he sobers up. But and also thank you to you guys, because we got some lovely messages from people saying, get well soon. We need our daily fix of Double Tap. So, yes, I appreciate that. And we are back today. Yes, we're back. In fact, we got this email and we're going to get it read by Laura in the next day or so. So I promise you, you will hear the whole message. But Mark Fisher got in touch, a new listener from Perth in Western Australia, who found the show this year and enjoys the banter and stories covered.
I
can see why Australian people like us, because we're like Australian people. You know, we're similar, we're very similar. Minus the tan and the
good looks,
wonderful climate health. And the health,
yes,
and all those things. We're the same because we like a laugh.
That's true. Very casual, friendly people, the Australians.
I love Australia. I'd live in Australia. I would. I mean, it's so far away.
Yes. Yes. What, the commute would be a nightmare?
Yes, no, getting back home to do the show would be a nightmare.
It's more about the spiders and the snakes and the...
Fine. Just take bug spray with you and you'll be fine.
We've only got hedgehogs in the UK. That's as wild as it gets. Anything where they've got bears and snakes and things that bite, no thank you.
Although last night, I did have a fox out the back garden. Let's just say, what's that Black Eyed Peas song? Tonight's gonna be a good night.
I see.
Wow.
There was a lot of noise.
A little bit noisy from the foxes. Yes, exactly. That's exactly the noise it was making.
Stop it. You're going to make me cough. I am hovering over this cough button. So if I go silent, listeners, that's why. Went to the kitchen last night in the middle of the night to get a drink. Dog followed me, as he always does, and went absolutely crazy in the kitchen, like he was chasing something. Oh, is there anything worse than that? I mean, there must have been something in there, but what? No idea. What do you do? It was too late to get the kids up to have a look. So, I'm convinced I've got a mouse or something in there now. It's awful. I'm going to set up a spare iPhone. So I want an app with a motion detection camera feature. So I want to see if there's anything in there. I want to record. Leave it in the kitchen at night and see if it captures anything on video. If anyone's got any recommendations how I can do that.
I've got a great idea. You know, for Be My Eyes, right? Because Mike Buckley over there at Be My Eyes, he likes to get his finger into all the pies, right? What about security cameras?
Be My AI Security.
Be My Security, right? So what you do is you link Be My Eyes into your security system, and then you could say, who's in my kitchen? And it would say, big man with a hat on, or
a very
a
big
fox,
mouse.
Or, yeah, exactly. Or a man struggling to understand how to use an air fryer.
Is that AI that's going to be saying that, or would it be a real volunteer?
Look, I'm not the details guy, right? I'm just coming up with the suggestions here.
You can have that one, Mr. Buckley. We'll leave that with you.
Figure it out. Anyway, I mentioned Mark Fisher's email because he says, as I mentioned, you know, people like the double tap fix. Well, you might think that's tricky to say. Try this one. Mark says, I can recommend there is nothing like a daily double tap down under.
Oh, I like that.
There you go.
It sounds slightly saucy, but
because he's in Australia. That's down under. That's what we say. Unless, of course, you're there. I guess we'd be up and over.
Right, yeah. Let's leave that alone. I want that on a T-shirt. That's all I'm going to say. Let's get this merch sorted out.
Again, never going to happen.
Double tap down under. Stop it.
I've been too busy printing out the I'm with stupid T-shirts with the arrow pointing upwards.
That's very good.
Slight issue with the production there. Speaking of production, and this actually, you know, I think we almost made a tenuous link into some tech news. Wow.
Oh. Well, accidental.
Oh, totally. Apple apparently are ending the production of fine woven cases and watch bands. Okay,
why?
I'll do it properly. Right, let's try that again. Right, let's imagine we actually thought this was quite a good story. So Apple apparently ends production of fine woven cases and watch bands.
But why would they do that? Would someone think of the children?
That's exactly why they're doing it. They're thinking of the children spending their pocket money on rubbish.
Why rubbish? I wouldn't say that. They're very good quality, if Apple are listening. No, to be serious, then what's the reasoning behind this?
Well, because they're not that great. So apparently a lot of buyers have been noticing that the material is prone to attracting dirt, scuffs, and other durability issues, according to 9to5mac.com. Fine woven also simply felt far less premium than the leather lineup it replaced. That was not easy for me to say with this remaining
well
cold.
Done.
albeit Apple charging the same prices for it as opposed to the leather.
It's just not selling then. That's
not
the
selling.
Reason.
I think also people are saying it just doesn't look that great. I'll be honest, I moved back to leather because you know me, I love the planet. And I bought
just
this.
Just hate cows. Yeah.
I have no issue with cows. I very much enjoy them. But the leather case I get is from a company called Nomad.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a very nice and very pleasant feeling. But I thought there was a thing called vegan leather. And I thought that was quite nice. So why haven't they done that? Because
they all
vegan
kind of feel the
nice?
Same. Pleather. Is that a thing? Pleather?
Pleather?
Or something like that. Yeah,
what is vegan
leather?
Is that just made of car parts
Vegans.
Or something?
I have no idea. Like, it doesn't matter. It all feels the same. It is all about the quality, though. I bought some cheaper ones on my time, and you know, they fall a bit when they get wet, or you know, they crack very easily. So, but I always thought that those more expensive cases, I always thought were slightly. I don't know. Why would
you
buy?
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Oh yeah,
well,
yeah, yeah.
Honestly, like,
cultural
look,
elite. Yeah, yeah.
Well, would you spend $50? On a leather case, really?
Yes.
Yeah, but why? What's the difference between that and a $20 one?
It just feels like this Nomad one.
No, I'm sorry.
It smells kind of like leather now. chocolatey leather. But no, I mean, look, I do understand why these companies want to move away from the leather. I totally understand that. But it's got to be a good replacement. And I have to be honest, it felt like... I felt like I was scratching my fingers on a record, an LP, if you will.
It's got a texture to it, but then so's leather. So, I mean...
Yeah, it's a nicer texture. Anyway, they're talking about moving on with a different leather alternative like Alcantara. Alcantara.
Oh, yes, I love that.
I was there on holiday once. It was a fantastic place.
I saw it in Star Wars. Look, that's... Just give us a reasonably priced case. I think that's all we need. Anything, $25 even. It makes me balk a little bit when you see these manufacturers, and this isn't just Apple, although they're probably the best example, but you buy your phone, and then if you're in the same shop and you try and buy a case, It's extortionate. I just don't honestly see the value in these cases.
Well, I hope you don't mind me saying out of school that you're someone who doesn't often put a case on your phone.
No, I do. I do like the feeling of the naked phone. I mean, it's a beautiful design. I do like that. So, yeah, and I don't really have much trouble. Although saying that, my phone has got a chip in the edge of it now because I dropped it in the shower. Yeah.
Is that the phone that Apple sent you?
No. It's the 12 that I dropped. This one does have a case on it. Yes, the one you sent me. I didn't bother with a case, but the one Apple sent me.
I just bash it off the walls? Who cares?
Yes. But no, I mean, they're all pretty sturdy now. How often do you drop your phone?
I don't think I've ever dropped my phone. It's a strange thing. I mean, it's funny. I don't drop my phone unless I'm carrying it with something. You know, sometimes you might carry, like, I'll bring my laptop upstairs and I've got my phone almost like just sitting on top of it and I'm carrying the two of them. And then for whatever reason, I stumble on the step and, well, everything goes. And that's it. But no, I don't drop it on its own.
The worst thing, and I've done it a few times, is when I've been in a taxi or in some car and I get my phone out for whatever reason, check the GPS, see where we are maybe, and I leave it on my lap and I don't put it back in my pocket. Yep. And then I get out of the car and it just skids along the concrete of the sidewalk and you go, oh no. I've done that about 2 or 3 times and yeah, that was never good. But I don't do that anymore.
And also just another quick Apple story to mention, because again, I spotted this at the weekend and this doesn't really surprise me, although it kind of irritates me a little bit. The Mac Mini, the humble Mac Mini, the blind Mac, you might want to call it, Mac without a screen. Well, I do. Yes. May not get the M3 processor. In fact, it may get an M4. Now, you might think, okay, that's good, because then it gets a better processor. Fine. But yes. I think the fact is that it's not going to get that, so it means we're not going to get a new Mac Mini for a year or so. In some ways, I'm kind of irritated by this, because I do like the idea of getting the M3 Pro into the Mac Mini, but equally, I think this might be a smarter way of Apple doing this. I think what has happened here is Apple have listened to me, because
I was going to say. You were just complaining that they were pumping out these M series Apple Silicon too soon and they should take their time. And then when they do it, you're irritated by it, your own suggestion.
Well, I do. That happens quite a lot, to be perfectly honest. But you know, I will say on this occasion, I think that this is right. This is the right way to do it, because, you know, then you're not having to, you don't get that FOMO feeling. Also, let's be honest, I think that the people who buy a new Mac Mini every year are very, very few and far between. So I think, you know, you're more likely to be someone who would buy a Mac Mini every 3 years, 4 years. I mean, these things could last
probably
5 to 10.
Every year anyway.
Exactly.
Nobody.
Exactly. So it's not going to happen. But they're saying that the Mac Mini with the M4 may likely arrive early 2025. Mm. Although this all depends, I guess, on what's coming up at iOS or with iOS 18 and macOS, the new version, because the push is going to be on AI. And with the push moving to AI, that may require more processing power, which will therefore, you know, mean that they'll be keen to move people onto this new processor at that point. Not to say, of course, that this will not you know, work on previous generations.
That's a really good point, though, because there is a definite distinction here when it comes to AI that people need to know about. And the way that Apple are going is by running everything on device, on your iPhone, on the Mac. They're not going to be sending anything out for processing, hopefully. So, you know, for privacy reasons, that's Apple's shtick. So, yeah, that is a very good point. Is it going to require, you know, a new chip with enhanced onboard AI? I don't know.
How do you do that?
Or will it be backwards compatible?
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because how do you do that? How do you sell that? Because if it's a brand new feature that can only, I mean, I know we've had this before with Siri, right? We had this where you had to buy a specific device to get it. It could just be a case. Maybe I'm thinking it might be like the Amazon Echo. You know, yes, you can get the latest features, but you'll have to buy this brand new Amazon Echo. But, you know, the existing Amazon Echo features will still exist on the old one. And maybe that's how they'll do it. Maybe there'll just be a split point where it's like, okay, if you want the super duper Siri, you're going to have to buy this machine.
Nah,
super duper Siri. I don't know. It could happen. Apple are good at just saying, right, that's it. We've drawn a line. We're moving on.
Yeah.
I mean, look,
they are.
I remember
the DVD
drive. I remember the headphone jack.
Yeah.
You know, all the grief, the amount of words that were written about that, the amount of upset, and you know, even deleting ports. You know, when it was the, I remember when that MacBook came out, the 12-inch MacBook came out, and it only had one USB-C port. By the way, before anything else had USB-C in it, it was the only one to have it. It was ahead of its own time. And it failed.
But it was, and it wasn't. I mean, yeah, it had a great port on it, but one.
But just
one. I mean,
one.
That's yeah, quite frankly, that was quite ridiculous. But the thing with Apple is this AI has probably been in the roadmap for years anyway. There's no saying that this the new Apple Silicon wasn't taking this into account anyway. So it may already be perfectly possible to run the AI that they're talking about now on the existing Apple Silicon. So it may not require a specialized chip or an updated chip. It may be absolutely fine.
So last night, I decided to bring out my trusty old Lenovo laptop, which has been with me for a while. It's a great little machine, same one you've got. And I thought, okay, let's get it set up because I haven't used it for a long time. I've been on the Mac every day. But, you know, if I'm honest, there's things I want to try out and see on what's essentially what's going on with Windows, right? What's happening at the moment with it.
Yeah.
And I turned it on last night and I charged it up. Of course, the battery's totally dead.
Of course.
And I get the updates beginning. So the updates start rolling in and it's going through the process and everything's fine. And at one point, I sort of leaned over to the machine. I was aware of it doing its thing. I could hear the fans spinning up a little bit. And then the next minute, I sort of leaned over to touch it. And I thought, is this about to burst into flames? I mean, honestly, it felt like it was on fire. And then just for a moment, with the screaming fans and the almost, you know, plastic smelling, burning smell.
Bubbling, yes.
Yes. I thought, yes, it's a PC. I forgot how wonderful this experience was.
My
computer's on fire. I could turn off the heating. It was lovely. I got a beautiful...
Macs were like that for the longest time when they were running Intel, so don't get all high and mighty about that now. And
yeah, but
I have the
on.
Same laptop.
Hello, PC.
I have the same laptop and don't have that problem at all. So I suggest that yours is full of crumbs and detritus, maybe. It needs a clean.
Well, I don't know about that. But I will say it is now full of lovely,
yes,
new,
is.
Beautiful updates. But of course, that's the thing. It's so funny when you go back to a PC, isn't it? You turn the thing on, and then you've got 8 million updates that come through. And then you've got to do your screen reader updates. So I've got to do NVDA updates, and I've got to do JAWS updates, and I've got to do this update, and I've got to do this,
yes,
update. And then I've got the Lenovo system updates. I'll need to go through and do all that. So what's there just one button that could just do all this? You know, can I just go and do one button and leave it overnight and it'll come back in the morning and be lovely and also not on fire? That would be nice.
Okay.
Apparently
I think
not.
You need a new laptop for one thing. That one seems to get hot when it shouldn't get hot, or at least use it more regularly. I mean, it's doing 1,000 updates because you don't use it for a year at a time.
Well,
maybe.
That's very true. That is very true. But it is interesting to me the difference in experience. And, you know, I was talking to someone last night on Mastodon.
You love Windows.
Well, I do like Windows, but it infuriates me at times. And the one that got me was, if you want Windows Pro, you got to spend like $100 to get a Windows Pro versus Windows regular home or whatever it is. So if you want that Pro functionality, and I don't really still fully understand why you'd want that, but if you did, you got to spend $100. I don't understand why we're still at this point, especially when people are paying per month for Microsoft Office and all the rest. Why can't they just roll this into one subscription or do what some other manufacturers have done? Google.
What?
Mac.
What?
Just give away the operating system. What are you paying for? Why am
give
I paying
it away.
For, why am I paying for the same thing with a Pro badge?
Because Pro gives you extra features that most home users wouldn't care about, such as remote desktop.
But these are consumer prices, right? So if you want...
consumer prices?
Yeah, I mean, I understand for business. I can understand that, I guess, but...
Are you saying you want to pay a monthly fee for Windows now? You want that to be a subscription?
No, I don't want to pay for any of it. Look, I remember the days going into the Apple Store and I would buy my CD, as you do with Windows as well. You could go to Best Buy or whatever and you would pick up the DVD or the CD off the shelf in the box. You would take it home, you would install the update, and that was you. You had the latest operating system. Vista, I think, was the last one I ever bought for Windows. Goodness, that was a bad idea. And Snow Leopard was the last one on the Mac. And I remember having the little box and the CD, and I come home, and I'm like,
oh, it's all nostalgia.
Oh, it was great. But, you know, they moved on, and Apple stopped charging for those updates. But it doesn't seem like... I mean, Windows are giving it free, but if I'm honest, I'm still totally confused about what is essentially legal and what isn't in terms of Windows. And because it's like, okay, am I paying for a license? Do I get the license with the machine I buy? So therefore, if I buy a machine, I get the license. But then if I reinstall the system, does the license stay with it? Because I don't think it does. It depends. Confusing.
On pre-built machines now, the product key is built into the BIOS of the system, the secure BIOS. So if you can't move away from that computer, basically. But I think Windows, at least Microsoft, have eased up a lot. You can, as I mentioned earlier, you can run a version and install Windows without a product key, and you barely get any limitations. Now, it's not to say Microsoft at some point in the future can just flick a switch and say, right, if you're
that's the problem, right? So you're kind of living on as an outlaw.
Yeah, but not as it used to be that you couldn't install it without a product key in the first place. You weren't able to skip Windows.
No, that's right. I mean, remember the old days? In fact, I don't know if this one has it. I don't think it will have. But I remember the old Dell laptops I used to get, even the desktops as well, the laptops, they all would have a sticker on them. And that would have the serial number of the Windows installation on the sticker. Remember that?
That's right. Yeah.
And
yeah,
you just make sure, whenever you were putting in the serial number, you just had it on the box. And that made perfect sense. I just think we surely have moved away from all that. It feels, again, it's that Windows legacy thing that all this stuff seems to hang around. And I don't really know how it benefits a consumer. I understand business, but for consumers, you know, surely the operating system, and even worse, actually, if Microsoft are looking to monetize inside, say, the start menu, which is rumored that they are, then hang on. So not only am I paying for this, but you're going to put ads in front of me as well?
No, I totally agree. I do agree. And what's the revenue stream from the operating system itself to Microsoft compared to something like an Office subscription or the enterprise services that they offer?
We all know exactly what used to happen, right? There was always a guy who had a CD printer and
a CD duplicator,
and he would go off and make a million copies of Office, and that would go round. And I remember working in an office years ago, and you know, there's a version flying round, and people would get the disc that had it on it, and you would install it on your computer, and you had to give the disc back, and all this nonsense.
What? That's a disgrace. I want names. I want numbers. That's criminality.
And then what happened was Microsoft brought in a subscription model to try and clamp down on that. And it worked. It totally worked. I mean, yeah, there probably are. I think there are versions of Microsoft Office you can buy now that are buyout rather than a tie to subscription. I think those options do come up every so often.
But yeah.
I think the biggest issue with Microsoft for me as a consumer, and I know and I understand from an education or a business perspective, I just think from a consumer, it's very confusing. Even if you go to the website, like if I go to Apple's website or Google, even Google's website, it's not about Apple versus Windows. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that there's a simplistic view of how everything works. I go to Apple, I know I'm looking at a laptop, I'm looking at a phone, I'm looking at an iPad. I understand what those devices are. I understand what the costs are. It's all laid out and very clear. You go to Microsoft's website, I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know what I'm buying. I don't know, you know, there's different versions of devices depending on being a business to being not a business, to being a student, to being a child, to being an alien from another planet. Everyone has a different code. It's just, I don't get it. I think, you know, honestly, guys, you could simplify this so much. And I do feel, and I'm kind of almost campaigning a little bit for a Microsoft rewrite. Would you start again, guys? Could you just start again?
Simple as that. Just start again. Knock down the empire that you've spent decades building and start again.
You have to continue doing what you're doing because obviously, as we said before, there has to be a legacy for all the companies that need it. But with a little maybe hand on the wheel a little bit to say, maybe time to move away from this legacy. Because look, at the end of the day, if you continue to support something, then people won't change it. companies will not change if they don't have to, right? If something works, why change it? So if Microsoft commit to making that piece of software available so that, you know, you can still run that thing that you're running, then of course that's always going to be in place. If you say, look, we're giving you a year's notice on this, or a 2 year notice, and we're saying, right, at the end of 2026, all this legacy is gone. We're going to start again with a new Windows for the future. Less bloat, more focused on capability, more focused on the things that people want to do today. I think that would be a product worth getting excited about, because I feel the problem with Windows for me is that you have this bloated system that they just keep adding more bloat to. And I saw someone say the other day, and I thought this was really pertinent. They said, I was using my computer the other day with 32 gigabytes of RAM in it. So quite a lot of memory. Average would be, say, 16 gig of RAM for memory is pretty good, right? I mean, most computers might even come with 8.
Yeah.
This guy was running with 32 gigs of RAM. He said, I remember my computer back in the 90s with 32 megabytes of RAM, and it feels exactly the same today. In terms of processing, in terms of power, in terms of capability, in terms of the issues that he's had, it doesn't feel like much has improved. It doesn't feel like Windows has improved that much.
You can't say that, though.
I can't disagree with that. I put that Lenovo on last night. I'm sorry, this machine is, what, 4 years old, if even that? It feels sluggish. It feels slow. I'm still having audio issues with JAWS. And this is not on, you know, I'm connected to a monitor which has got speakers, but I disabled them. So I'm using the speakers out of the Lenovo. I'm still having those moments where JAWS is hanging and it's waiting to, and it's not all on JAWS. It's because it's doing it with Narrator. It's doing the same with NVDA. This is a system issue. It's just too much going on. And they're continually changing it and adapting it. Microsoft, it's time for a rewrite. Start again.
Wow. Okay. Firstly, you can't compare it to our old systems because the operating system is now doing a billion more things than it was back in the day. You can compare it as in you could step it up. I mean, the amount of processes that may be running in the background back in 1992 compared to now may be totally different. And the amount of CPU usage they take up may be totally different. So you can't really compare it to say it feels worse today than it did back in the day. I don't think that's fair.
I thought Windows 7 was actually quite nice. I thought Windows XP was fine.
Don't go back. Yeah. You say that now. Back in the day, maybe not. Look, and you may be absolutely right, because I think a distinction between the enterprise and the consumer divisions of Microsoft would be a good idea. Let's cut it off. If enterprise needs to run on these legacy systems, then let's run that separately. I'm sure internally in Microsoft that's exactly what happens. But yeah, I think you may have a point. Maybe for the end user, the average home user, maybe it is time to slim it down. But maybe that's what's coming with the ARM version of Windows with the reduced instruction set.
This would be the best time to do it. If you're going to make a switch, this is the moment. Because it is kind of, and I know it's not entirely the same, and we don't really know what Apple did with their operating system when they finally moved over to Silicon. Whether they rewrote the whole thing from scratch or whether they just adapted it, I think there's a lot of adaption went on. I mean, we know, for example, the voiceover code, it was pretty much copy and paste. So, you know, a lot of, you know, similarity, I'm sure. The difference, I guess, with Apple is they don't carry the legacy. They kill the legacy as soon as they possibly can. And it was interesting because the other night I was playing with my 2011, I think it is, MacBook Air, which is an 11-inch MacBook Air, but one of the last ones. And, I mean, what a stunningly wonderful little machine. I mean, it had an Intel processor in it, so it was utterly horrendous. But, you know, it was, I swear, if that thing had silicon, if that thing had silicon in it, it would be flying. But, you know, it was surprisingly good. I mean, I was, like, amazed at how good VoiceOver was running on it. But there's a reason for that. The reason is because if that was a PC, it would be running Windows 11. But with Apple, they say, no, when you get to this age, this is as far as it can go. So it will always be as good as the last time you turned it on. That's the difference. That's the key difference. You need a cutoff point.
You want the walled garden. You want to be told.
No, you can't install anything on this. No, it's not walled garden. It's saying enough is enough. Because look, you cannot say, hey, I've got a Pentium 2 processor with, you know, 100, I don't know, let's see, 16 megabits of RAM, and I can run Windows 11 on it. And people say, well, in theory, you can. Well, yes, of course you can. But it's going to be like a snail crawling across the street. It's just going to be horrible.
And when Microsoft put in the Windows 11 limitations for security and tech performance, everyone lost their mind saying, well,
of course they do. You got to get past that, right? Just forget that nonsense. I'm sorry, I'm not interested in that. People go off their nut about absolutely everything. Have you been online? Have you been on Twitter? Have you been on Facebook? Somebody says something and everybody loses their minds. But you know what? 5 seconds later, they kind of forget and get on with it. Here's the problem with what Microsoft did with that announcement of the TPM chip requirement for Windows 11. This particular chip had to be in the system and enabled. Here's the issue with it. You can bypass it. That's the issue. You can bypass it. So guess what everyone's doing? They're bypassing it. And now they're complaining that Windows isn't great. Of course, because it's not meant to be on that system.
Not Microsoft's
problem. Microsoft have got to take control of this. It's their software. They've got to say, right, from this date, any machine older than this, forget it. I'm being harsh.
Okay. You are being very harsh. I know you've been ill, Stephen, but don't take it out on Microsoft.
Feel good now.
That's all I'm saying. Can I just say quickly before we move on? I just want to say,
hang on.
Limitless.
He says move on.
Limitless, we were talking about, right? The new service which tracks everything you're doing and allows you to sort of query your day and what were you talking about and what topics were brought up. Sounds really good. I just heard about AI Explorer from Microsoft, which will be coming up in the next Windows, which does pretty much the same thing. It keeps track of all your emails, all your system activity, and you'll be able to query it through something like Copilot. I just thought it was an interesting comparison, and people, I think, are going to freak out a little bit more about that.
Yeah, look, this is where it's going, isn't it? This is AI. It's going to be all around us, and it's also going to be listening to us and watching us. But in fairness, we've kind of already had that with everybody who bought an Amazon Echo. You've got a device listening to you all the time. People are getting used to that. That's part of life.
No, it's not listening to you all the time.
Well,
only when you invoke
it. Of course it's listening to you.
No, it's not.
It's always, of course, how is it understanding what I'm saying if it's not listening?
Yeah, it's not going anywhere. No one is listening.
I'm not saying it's doing anything. I'm not saying it's listening. I'm not saying it's doing anything based on what...
Just like mainstream media. People will take that and say, yes, there's spies on you.
Calm down, right? I'm not saying that it's doing anything. Back to the Fox again. We brought it round. We're the heroes. But yeah, it's not doing anything, but it is listening. Of course it's listening. It wouldn't be able to do anything if it wasn't listening. The only way to make sure it's not doing anything is to unplug it.
Okay.
Anyway, look, we really must move on because, you know, I know, I'm blaming Mr. F, but I'm now just going to shout at you myself. Just calm down over there, Fox News.
Okay, carry on.
Follow Double Tap on social media at Double Tap On Air and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts and email us feedback@doubletaponair.com. We'll be right back. Call the Double Tappers now, 1-877-803-4567 or email us feedback@doubletaponair.com.
Okay, time to get into a couple of our emails that we get. You know we get those emails, Sean. Those emails. Oh, come on.
Emails.
We get emails. We get your email every day. I'm feeling better.
Here's your mail today.
Binky, bonky. Oh, we got an oosh as well.
That was hard work, I will
say.
Tough?
Yes. You're okay over there.
I know. I'm a hero. Oh, have we got emails? I love it when we get emails.
What, so that you don't have to speak?
Yes, exactly right. I need a breather.
That's why they send in the emails, is to stop us from speaking. I think that's the whole point. Right, let's get to Elliot first off, who's been to the cinema.
Hello, Double Tappers. Just had my latest in a long line of frustrating visits to the cinema trying to watch a film with audio description. Why, in 2024, can we not come up with a better system that doesn't involve headsets, which either have ear cups missing? just don't work at all, or have so much static interference, I imagine it's like listening to a transistor radio in the 1920s.
Yes.
On a recent visit to New York, I was able to watch a show while listening to a pre-recorded AD track via an iPhone app. It wasn't perfect, and the timing was a little out at times, but surely if we can have that at a theatre, why not at cinemas? Interested to know what cinema access is like in the US and Canada and the rest of the world compared to here. For me, I'm just fed up of writing complaint emails to the cinema after the event and just getting back vouchers to go and see something else that probably also won't work with AD. As an accessibility consultant myself, I can't help feeling like Jacob, who you spoke to recently. It can be just exhausting sometimes fighting for accessibility, and it feels like a constant uphill battle. Anywho, rant over. Oh yes, and if anyone is remotely interested, the film I went to see was Back to Black, the new Amy Winehouse biopic. Elliot from a sunny but cold pool.
Yeah, British weather.
Do you know what? This is a really difficult subject because I kind of get it as well. You're banging your head against a brick wall. But then as soon as you say, you know, I think cinemas have given up when it comes to this technology. I honestly do. It's been terrible for the longest time. I think they're just not interested. But does that mean you stop complaining because you know it's a slow-moving tanker of a audio description to get that improved in any way? So do you stop complaining? In that case, they can happily say, well, no one's said anything. Or do you keep banging your head against that wall? Of course you should do, but I totally understand how people get exhausted by this. I've given up. The amount of times we'll go to the cinema and you get those headsets. And then if you turn your head the slightest 1 degree off center, you get full of white noise and static. And you can't do that for an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's absolutely ridiculous.
So the last cinema experience I had was going to see Barbie with my wife. What? I should really quickly add with my wife.
Okay.
What?
That makes it better.
I'm a metrosexual man. I take the subway and various other things.
That's very good. Well done.
I wanted to see what the fuss was about. So I think, if I'm honest, I found it funnier than my wife did. She didn't really like it, but I actually found it quite good. I like the music. But anyway, we went in and we were told audio description, and it's these cinemas now where they've kind of upgraded a lot of them in the UK to have these big leather reclining seats and all that lovely stuff. Although you pay for the privilege, and you go in and you sit down and we get ready to watch the movie, and it's kind of a mid afternoon or early afternoon showing, so there's virtually nobody else there, and the film starts, and we've got the earpiece in, and there's always that moment of trepidation. Will there be audio description? Because we've seen that particular movie before, right? When it starts and there's no AD.
Yeah.
And so we're waiting and there's nothing. Nothing is coming through the headset. Now, the headset on this occasion was a little box with a headphone jack in it, which you could use the supplied headphones that were packaged up, or you could use your own headphones. And I thought that was pretty cool, actually, because...
That's nicer, yeah.
Yeah, a lot nicer because, you know, and packaged... Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, you get these headphones, you don't know who's been wearing them. After COVID, I mean, I thought we would have stopped all that nonsense, but clearly not, according to Elliot. So anyway, I left the cinema and I went back to the main desk, and I tried to explain to the woman at the desk, look, we don't have audio description here. And she said, oh, but you do. I can hear. You're supposed to hear the film through the headset. And I said, yeah. I said, but it has... an additional voice. And at that point, a cast member's talking, right? So I guess Barbie is talking to Ken, right? And she's going, yes. Oh, but people are talking, look. And I'm like, yeah, that's Margot Robbie. She's not doing the description.
Again, okay?
I don't think she's the one who's doing it. So, I mean, I love Margot Robbie. She's brilliant. But I don't think she's also saying, oh, by the way, here's a special track just for you blind people. I'll describe everything I'm doing.
She might do.
It'd be cool, but I don't think it's happening. So eventually this guy comes over. And he says, oh, that's funny, he said, because, yeah, the same thing happened the other day. What screen is this guy in? And the woman said, oh, he's in screen one. And he said, ah, screen one doesn't have audio description yet. Okay. So we're thinking, right, now what? So he says, look, there's another showing starting in 20 minutes in the other screen. That definitely has audio description. He says, can I take you in there? And they were very pleasant. They moved us, because of course you'd get out of it settled, and I had my 8 hot dogs and my pizza and my steak pie and my drinks, this, you know, yes, the size of a small house. So a trolley was brought in to move everything and us.
And it cost you $300, by the way. So right, expensive, yeah, that food.
And so then we moved to this other cinema, and I'm saying to him, look, please tell me. And of course, you know, the thing is, you're interrupting the film for other people as well. You're very conscious of all that. But anyway, what can you do? So we moved into the other cinema seat. We got the same seats. It was very pleasant. We sat down again. And the guy explained to me that he had noticed this problem because he had wanted to know what audio description was, and he'd been into that screen and realized it didn't have it. So he flagged it to his bosses. And it kind of taught me something, which we kind of know, but it's so important that the people, the staff who actually work there, get a chance to sample this stuff. And, you know, in his case, it's only because he took an interest in it himself. Otherwise, they wouldn't have known what he knew. And I think that's part of it as well. It's not just a, I mean, we say the companies don't care, but the company's just a big faceless thing, right? I mean, what does that even mean? When we say the company doesn't care, ultimately, we're talking about two or three people who are standing behind a desk, who are manning this cinema, you know, on minimum wage, who are trying their best just to keep a job and keep smiling in the face of some pretty horrible people who they probably have to deal with every day.
Us, yes.
Well, no, not so much us necessarily. I mean, I think I always try and be very nice to people because
the general public.
Well, look, the way I look at staff who do these jobs is I think, look, you're just doing a job, right? It's not, you don't run the company. You know, if the CEO's standing there, I may have a different view. But I'm not going to shout at a member of staff who's, you know, working minimum wage. It's not their fault. But that's the point. So if you can engage with the staff, if the company could engage with the staff to say, look, take an interest in this, you know, let's check everything's working, let's make sure our access experiences are the best, then you would figure out some of these problems before they arise, instead of someone going to the cinema, often not alone, but sometimes with friends, suddenly you're sitting watching a movie you can't enjoy. And you're just laughing along for the sake of it. It's such an exclusionary experience.
It is. Yes, exactly. I've had exactly the same experience when I used to take the kids when they were younger to the cinema. And you'd get in there with your headphones on and you'd be flicking that switch left and right. And which one is it? And is it that? And actually, there isn't any AD, or it's so unusable that, you know, I got to sit in this position with my head to whatever. And you end up just sitting there, just not enjoying the movie, not being able to take part in the movie because, well, I couldn't make my way back to the reception anyway, and I don't want to leave the kids and drag the kids out. So you just sit there and it's a waste of time. But to say, look, of course it's not the staff's fault there, but if we always think of these companies as faceless, you know, behemoths with no way to interact with them, then how do you remedy this? This should be as part of the training. When someone is onboarded as a member of staff, there should be, you know, a disability training there. You know, people in wheelchairs and the best way to help them access whatever they need to access. What is audio description? These headphones, not just a cursory, you know, and maybe there's a booklet here to read. There should be a half a day of training, part of your inboarding or your onboarding.
Yeah,
that should be company policy, company ethos, whatever you want to call it. It's not, they're not a faceless nothing that can't be changed.
Do you know the problem here, though? What happens is they tend to bring consultants in for the day to deliver this kind of training. And that, I think that spells the problem for a lot of these companies, because what they do is they almost see it as a tick box exercise to deliver the training, and they treat it as such. You know, it's not part of the company ethos. It's not part of any of that. It's just there's people that might come in with wheelchairs and people who are blind. You know, here's what you need to do. You need to not treat them like idiots. And I'll take my $500 consultancy fee now. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of it. You know, companies love to, and it's interesting, we're coming up to Global Accessibility Awareness Day. And we're going to be talking about this soon with Joe Devon, who is one of the founders, along with Jenison Asuncion, one of the founders of Global Accessibility Awareness Day. And I see people talking now, and it's interesting to see how this has developed, where people are now feeling that this is just an opportunity for companies to say, oh, yeah, we're all about accessibility. Yeah, look, we do this, we do that. And then they put an image up on their tweet that doesn't have alt text on it.
Yes.
And yes. So you feel really included at that moment. And really, it just feels like it's a tick box exercise. And that's the problem. You know, I don't know how we can get around this, because the
complaining.
Well, complaining, yeah, but the problem is sometimes it's there's. I don't know the right phrase. I do know the right phrase. It's not coming to mind right now. But there was I remember hearing this from somewhere. It was almost like I don't want to say it because I'll make a fool of it. And it was a good point.
It was a good quote. You don't want to butcher it.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing is, there's not.
It comes back to me. I'll tell you.
There's not that you could. I mean, I suppose the argument is how many of us does there need to be complaining to make a difference? And even if 100% of us complained, how much of a percentage is that they would take a notice of their general customer base anyway?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, yeah,
it's all about cost and bottom line and profit and how much would it take to implement accessibility training and whatever else and changing the AD systems in there. I don't know. I honestly, I've given up on it. There. I've just given up.
I'm kind of the same. I don't really go with the expectation of having a good time. You know, I go expecting problems, and that's not a good place to be. Really is not a good place to be. And the problem is that the less of us who go, the problem just gets worse for those who do. That's the biggest issue. But I don't know how I can get around that because I don't want to just go to somewhere just to get annoyed. I don't want to go places just to get annoyed.
Really?
Well, sometimes I do. But, I want to make that choice for myself. I don't want someone to put that decision on me. Let's move on. Thank you, Elliot, for that. I'm sure we'll come back to this and we'll hear others' experiences as well. Graham's got in touch on the subject of glidance and right turns.
I have one concern about the glidance system, and it's not really a problem with it. In North America, drivers can, in most cases, make a right turn on red. So what happens is that a driver creeps forward when the light is on red while looking to their left to see if it is safe for them to enter the traffic flow, not noticing there is a blind person on their right-hand side with their cane out in front of them wanting to cross the road. And the driver drives right over their cane, and that could be very expensive for somebody using a glidance system. Just something to consider. From Graham Langford in Toronto.
This kind of goes back to something I was saying last week about this, these issues with these smart devices, is again, if they get broken or damaged, you know, that's a lot of money you're going to lose. And look how many canes have been snapped, broken, bent, damaged over the years. It's a smaller cost. But equally, it's devastating because, you know, these days, especially, I feel, you know, there was a time when I wouldn't have necessarily said to people, hey, you should really carry a secondary cane with you. But now I'm like, with the state of the roads, with people not paying attention anymore. I mean, I remember getting that brand new cane. I got a brand new cane. It was a longer cane. I felt the cane I had wasn't long enough. So I got a longer one. It was brilliant. I'm marching through the streets of Edinburgh on, I think, 2 weeks before Christmas. And it's a very busy, crowded place, like all cities are at that time of year. And, you know, I'm marching down the street with my wonderful new cane and someone stands right on the end of it, trips, probably damages her ankle, mm-hmm. and certainly bent my cane out of shape, which meant that was not a fun ride home. And that's the problem.
Did you charge her? Did you say, sorry, that's 50 quid you owe me?
No, because it was an accident, which is fine. Accidents happen.
Yeah, but there's still cost involved. Has anyone ever done that?
What, do you want me to citizen arrest her?
Well, look, at the end of the day, that's going to cost you money. It's difficult, though. I would be tempted to say, hang on. Yeah, how much that costs? Is it a case that in the future...
You are such a liar. You would never do that. If I did that, you'd be like, oh, what are you doing, Stephen? You can't
you're
say that.
You're a
disgraceful human being. Well, I don't know this guy. And then you'd end up walking out into traffic just to get away from me. Yeah, that's exactly
true.
What would happen. So, you know, don't come at me with that, priest.
I'm just saying, people should pay. If it was in the future... If we are using these high-tech mobility aids, is it a case we're going to need insurance out there? Mm. And if that does happen and someone trashes your high-tech mobility aid, you're going to have to exchange insurance details in the future.
Well, I mean, certainly there'll be insurance.
He's absolutely right, though. I mean, who would pay for something in that situation?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, it's not like it's a car, you know, you have a clear, you know, process of, okay, if a car is in a crash or an accident, then you exchange details and you work it out between you. That doesn't happen with these kind of devices. Who's responsible? And ultimately, at the moment, it would appear it's us. We are the ones responsible for it. So if we're using something like this and then something happens to it, it will get, you know, the cost will bear on us. But there's another side to this. Anybody who's tried to get a cane next day, good luck with that, with a smart device. I can't get a standard white cane mobility aid next day unless I'm really lucky to live next to somewhere, which I don't. I'm trying to think the closest I could probably get. I'd have to get on a train to London, probably, to get a cane next day, if I really wanted one. That's probably the closest I could get, you know, to actually get my hands on one. And of course, it all depends on the size and the, you know, they're all different depending on, you know, you and, yep. and your, you know, individual requirements. So yeah, you know, there's a lot of issues here. This is why, again, I'm not against the technology. I love innovation, but I just think we've got to think this through, you know, because there's a practicality of, I mean, we'd make the joke about the one in the rain, although it's not much of a joke when you're spending a lot of money. But at the same time, okay, I feel with this kind of technology, it's got to be, there's a lot of considerations before I'd even think about it. And of course, and Stevie Wonder brought this up, actually, of all people, Stevie Wonder brought this up with Amos Miller from Glidance when he met him at CES, I think it was. Or CSUN, sorry, it was CSUN.
CSUN, yeah.
And he said, what happens if you're walking around a rough area? You know, you're walking around a rough neighborhood and you've got this device, which is clearly, you know, technology is, you know, you've got it on show. I mean, they're stealing people's mobile phones out of their hands. You know, and you get these people that say, well, who would steal a white cane from someone? Are you kidding?
It's happened.
Yeah. Look, I grew up in some pretty rough neighborhoods. I had to partly abandon my guide dog, you know, at the end when it was time to say enough is enough. It wasn't just this issue, but I had a lot of issues with my guide dog, a lot of issues with the dog. And people, especially. I had people who'd walk by and spit at the dog. It was not a nice area. What? Not a nice part of the world I lived in. Yeah, I know. And people give me that reaction all the time. What? Who would spit at a dog?
Yeah.
Horrible people who live in horrible places. That's who people do it. It happened a lot. Trust me. Horrible things happen. And yeah,
You talk to anyone in this community and you'll hear a story about someone rushing up and stealing the cane. Out of their hand, whether they be drunk or think it's funny or whatever it may be, it happens.
I had a guy do it once on a train where he grabbed the cane from the. I was sitting next to me on the seat on the train, and he grabbed it and he was drunk, and he grabs the cane and he unhooks the whole thing and he starts doing the whole "Here I am walking down, you know, with a cane, la la la," and everyone's finding it hilariously funny, and I'm sitting there saying nothing because I'm thinking there's nothing I can do here, there's nothing I'm going to say that's going to make this situation get any better, so. All I can do is ignore it and almost let it run out of steam.
Yeah.
And it did. And in the end, because all I kept thinking was, I hope I got to God I get this thing back.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, one of the lesser drunk people were dispatched to give me back the cane. And it was kind of one of those, there you go, thanks, we've had our fun.
Really?
It happens. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah.
Again, look, sadly. In life, you've only got your reaction, right? You've only got your reaction to these things. You can get worked up about it. You can say, you know, society is collapsing or whatever. But look, at the end of the day, there's always going to be bad people. There's always going to be people who think something's funny when it's not. That's just life. We cannot regulate every single thought and every single thing that people do. There's always going to be bad experiences. The only thing we can do is think about our own reaction to them. You can choose to get worked up about something. Or you can choose, and it's like we're standing up at the cinema. You can get worked up about it, or you could say, do you know what? I'll just wait till it comes out on Apple TV with description, and I'll just stay home and watch it. Like Oppenheimer. You know, I've held on for so long to see Oppenheimer because I want to see it, but I wasn't prepared to go to the cinema for it. I didn't want to go through that whole hassle. And I thought, I know eventually it'll show up on Apple TV or Amazon or whatever.
That's what I always think. Yeah, exactly.
And it does.
Yeah.
And it has. So I'll just watch it there.
I waited 10 years to watch Breaking Bad with AD, but you know, hey, eventually it turned up. We're very patient people.
And I know people get annoyed with us when I say things like this out loud, people get really annoyed because they kind of expect me to. And I think it's because we live in our community, everything feels like advocacy. This is why I think people always think I'm an advocate for something, because in our community, pretty much everybody is an advocate. I remember, and I was reminded of this the other day, a friend of mine was talking about being a blind ambassador. I get really irritated by that, if I'm honest. I hate this idea of being an ambassador for, you know, every single blind person on earth.
I like it.
No,
I'll take that title.
I hate it. I hate it because I hate it for so many reasons, because I don't hear anybody else on earth ever say this. I've never had a black person say to another black person, you must be an ambassador. You must be a good human being, because if you do something bad, everyone will think bad of you. I think most black people would say, I think people have got a view and they'll just have that view anyway. That's the truth of it. I think women would say the same. And I certainly would say the same. I think if somebody has a view of me being nothing or me being less than human or me being whatever, they're going to have that view, whatever I do. I can try and challenge them on it, but if you're at a level where you think I am subhuman, there's not much I can, there's not much more I can do. I mean, no. People who genuinely believe, and this is, and again, I say this to the side to people who listen, because it fascinates them when I tell people this. There are people who genuinely believe that when I had a guide dog anyway, and I see it with my wife as well, they think that the dog attached to your arm is smarter than you.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what they think. You're an idiot, but the dog, it knows all the bus numbers. It knows when to cross the road. It knows how to get the cans of food off the shelf and into your basket in the store. It's like, are you real? Are you serious? And I'm thinking, and I'm the idiot? That's the first thought I always have. I'm the idiot? Really?
It's difficult. It is really difficult.
But like I say, all you've got is your reaction, right? You can say, do you know what? I can get really worked up about this. Or I can say, do you know what? There's idiots everywhere, sighted zombies. Everywhere you turn, there's another one. You've just got to do what you've got to do.
That's not the end already. I hope you've pressed that button by accident.
No, we're out of time. That's it.
Wow, we really had a rant today. I'm so sorry.
We had so many emails to get through, and I wanted to get through all of them, but we managed to get through two.
Two emails.
That was an absolute unbridled success. Double Tap is back. Yay!
Hey!
Oh, it's been fun. Thank you again for all your feedback and messages. I'm off to get some eye drops because I've managed to rub salt into my eye, and I don't quite know how I've managed to do that.
Oh,
that
well was, done.
Rather clever. Very, very clever plan. A blind man has managed to blind himself even more. Congratulations to me. I'm a hero. We're back tomorrow. Thank
Ambassador.
You, Sean.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I represent no one.
Hi, I'm Jenny Bovard. Join me monthly for Low Vision Moments, where I speak with awesome guests about some of the amusing things that happen when you're blind or partially sighted. Watch on YouTube or download Low Vision Moments from your favorite podcast distributor.